T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Yesterday, the news surfaced that quarterback Joe Flacco was suffering from a back injury, expected to miss 3 to 6 weeks. Now, a variety of reports came out saying the Ravens expect him back in a week, could be out 3 to 6 weeks. Either way, anyone who's ever had a back issue knows that can get tricky. That can get dicey. Anyone in here with any back issues, actually?
Back hurts all the time.
Nah.
Oh, you?
Oh, yeah.
Ever like C5, a herniated disc or anything like that? Really?
Yeah, C5. It's jacked up, so my back is jacked up. So you get hit in there, shoot, you can get it's a lot of different things, especially your quarterback too, twisted in the way you turn. You never know. It's something that can always be reoccurring, you know. So it's going to be interesting to see how Joey Flacco, when's he come back, and how long can he stay healthy.
So the Ravens have to figure out what they're going to do. Course of action for Flacco, course of action for the next couple weeks. At the very least, you're going to want to get another arm into camp because you've got more receivers than normal, and you need guys who can throw passes. So the natural thought was, wait a minute, John Harbaugh, his brother's Jim Harbaugh, gym coach Colin Kaepernick. This could be a great landing spot. You peel it back one step further, and you find out that the offensive coordinator in Baltimore is none other than Greg Roman, a 49er fame who worked with Colin Kaepernick when he was at his absolute best. It seemed to be the perfect fit, at least for the time being. And then word comes down that Baltimore does sign a former Jim Harbaugh quarterback. Only it turns out to be David Olsen, who played for Harbaugh at Stanford and transferred to Clemson after he got beat out by Andrew Luck. Olsen of recent Arena League fame. Surprising that they did, in fact, sign a quarterback, Dibs, but it wasn't Colin Kaepernick?
I'm actually surprised for the first time. You look at all the other situations, even Seattle, where it looked like it might be a possible landing spot. I didn't see it, but this one I thought was the one. You know, the Harbaugh connection, the fact that John had gotten to know Colin a little bit over the years and not only liked him as a person, but liked what he could bring as a quarterback. I thought that they were going to be the ones to sign Colin Kaepernick and end this long nightmare of, is Kaepernick being blackballed? Can we please not talk about this anymore? And the only way to stop talking about it is to have a team actually sign him. And I thought this was going to be the one. So, yeah, I am surprised, Joe.
Here's John Harbaugh, head coach of the Baltimore Ravens, yesterday in regards to Colin Kaepernick. Take a listen.
You know, I've known Colin really, you know, through my brother for many years. And we've talked and then got to know him really well when they scrimmaged here. And he and I have been talking, you know, throughout the summer a number of times. And we've had some great conversations on the phone. I mean, it's really been a pleasure to talk to him and get to know him. And, you know, I like history and politics and stuff, too. So, you know, we've had some debates. And it's been fun. And he's a great guy. And he's a guy right now that's being talked about. We'll just see what happens with that. I think that's it'll all be speculation right now. But I think he's a really good football player. And as I said at the owners' meetings, I do believe he'll be playing in the National Football League this year.
I think it's fair to say that there are some NFL cities that would be better landing spots for Colin over other NFL cities. Not necessarily because of scheme fit, but because of how he would be received. Is that a fair assessment, that some cities would be a better landing spot than others?
Yes.
Okay. Not trying to offend anybody, but I do feel there is a distinction. You played in Baltimore. Is Baltimore one of those cities that would be a little bit more favorable to Colin Kaepernick and his views?
You watch The Wire, right?
When
you walk in the jungle.
Don't you go start a Wire conversation. How much time you got, buddy?
Exactly. So, of course, it'd be a place that he could be received. I mean, like I told you guys, 27, sometimes one weekend I was there, 27 people were murdered on a weekend. That's a lot of lives.
Is that number accurate?
Yeah, probably more.
In one weekend?
One weekend. Baltimore. It's tough. So, you look at Ray Lewis. Of course, he was innocent, but was accused of murder. Was accessory, was a part of, was there. At the crime, seeing the crime, look at the city. Ray Lewis still would come out. I played there, and when they would announce Ray Lewis, he would dance. And the crowd and the stand would go crazy. They're willing to forgive, put things behind. So Baltimore is a city that, yeah, I think would have been a little bit more tolerant. I don't know, and I think the biggest misconception is people are acting like this young man has committed a crime. Now, is it a crime against humanity? I don't know. Is it a crime that's trying to help people in a sense? Or people just can't get over the fact that it was done at the time where people love their sports to get away from all the politics and everything to go around. So they're like, look, when I'm watching football, when I'm watching my sports, I don't want politics involved. Is that the reason they don't want to, is that the reason they can't forgive? Because you never forget. I get that. But we do forgive. And you just look at the league and the state of the league with, as a guy who I defended, Alden Smith, 5 DUIs, all the different things that happened, Hardy throwing his girl on the bed with knives, with guns and all the different things, all these different things, these ferocious acts, violence. His wasn't violent. And you just got to see where are we really at, and people can't stand him. So I was shocked that he didn't get picked up there, Joe. I was really shocked that he hasn't gotten picked up, because NFL, you do want to win and coaches want to win. I believe this is higher than coaches. I really believe that there has been coaches that have went in there and said, let's bring this guy in. We can get him for low, $1 million. We can get this guy for darn near the minimum salary, $2 million, $3 million max. And you're still passing? You tell me that if Big Ben went down, you couldn't think that Colin can come down and run that offense? You look at Indianapolis Colts, Andrew Luck's hurt. Both those teams, they're in the gun, and they have good running game. You fake to Bell, fake the handoff, and now the safety stopped their feet. So it's that offense where the receivers run through zones. So it's not really that necessarily a complex offense. So don't give me all this reading and all these different things hogwash. I watch the game enough. I can study the game enough. I look at some of these offenses, different offenses, and it's the read offense where you're faking and the quarterback's in the gun. It's not on each center, and it's the play action. You're faking with the back in there. Safeties and linebackers are coming up, so there's windows in this offense. You're told where to go with the ball. It's not that difficult. The guy should be signed, and it's crazy that he's not.
Your hypocrisy knows no bounds, and I'm appalled to be working in this room with you today. Ray Lewis can go dance in Baltimore.
Dance.
But OJ can't go back to USC. Where you get off with that really? Assessment? Where you get off?
Why don't we bring OJ on the show? Tell him that you're a big OJ fan.
I'm not an OJ fan.
I know that. This is great. I love it.
Take a listen, because I think there was something in there that you said while I was getting ready to make my joke. There was something you said that has a lot of truth to it. Coaches wanting Kaepernick, but perhaps being overruled. Here's Adam Schefter on Mike and Mike yesterday morning. Take a listen.
I have not heard any concern from the league about that. I think the league feels like this is a decision that each and every team can make. Do I think that certain owners have blocked teams from visits or entry? I do. I do believe that. And I think that there has been more interest in him from the coaching and front office level than there has been at the ownership level. So it was always going to take a unique opportunity for him to be brought in the right place, at the right spot, at the right time. And to me, when you look at it, Baltimore looks like it could be that opportunity, depending on how this plays out here the next couple of days and depending on what that organization decides to do. But to me, I'm watching them to see if they decide to make a move on it.
I think we'd all agree that Adam Schefter is one of the most plugged in, reliable, bankable reporters the NFL has out there today. He works for ESPN. He does a tremendous job. There's a reason they pay him seven figures, because he is one of the absolute best. For him to say that, Dibs, does it just kind of confirm some of the suspicions you and others have had leading up to this point?
Yes, and I think every time another backup quarterback comes off the market and gets a job somewhere and it's not Colin Kaepernick, I think that confirms it as well. So we always look for two sources in journalism. Adam Schefter, having talked to people, that's a solid source. And then you look at the evidence that continues to come out. David Olson, I'm sure, had a nice career in the Arena Football League, which, by the way, is not what the Arena Football League was 5 years ago in terms of quality of play. But he's been working as a realtor. He only had a couple of games in college that he played, yet he gets a job and Colin Kaepernick doesn't. Even though this is a situation where the coach liked him, and they clearly are in need of a veteran, because if Flacco goes down, Baltimore's going nowhere with Ryan Mallett. I'm sorry.
Nowhere.
But the team, instead of, you know, even bringing him
in
for a workout.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Mallett could be the next Brady. You never know.
RG3 can get a workout with the L.A. Rams, but Colin Kaepernick can't even get a sniff in Baltimore? It's a joke.
Now, back to Joe, Lowe, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
From the 408 on the PenskeAutoSales.com text line, Joe, if OBJ played both ways like Deion Sanders, would he then be worth QB money? No, is the answer to that question. No wide receiver is worth anywhere near QB money. Here are the top wide receivers in terms of contract value at the moment. Number one, Antonio Brown. Good receiver, right? Good receiver. What happened in that game against New England last year when they needed him? At say, if you're going to give him $20 million a year and you want to make these guys the highest paid, what do you do?
Right.
Nothing. Didn't score, nine catches,
quiet
77
game.
Receptions, got blown out by a better New England team. Number two, A.J. Green. Love A.J. Green. Going back to his time at Georgia, excuse me. I'm not sure anyone high points the ball better than A.J. Green. How many playoff games has he won?
Zero.
That'd be zero. Julio Jones, number three with the Atlanta Falcons, made a monster play in the Super Bowl. He's a monster wide receiver, man. You can't stop the guy. What did it lead to? He couldn't protect that lead. He wasn't the one that took the sack that took him out of field goal range.
Can't contain his earrings either, while we're being fair and honest here. Lost that $150,000 earring while jet skiing.
Dez Bryant's number four. How would you rate Dez Bryant in terms of value to the club?
Pretty
Demarius
high.
Demarius Thomas is number five. T.Y. Hilton's number six. Keenan Allen, Deshaun Jackson, Larry Fitzgerald, Emmanuel Sanders, Tavon Austin, Allen Hurns, Randall Cobb, Jordy Nelson, Pierre Garcon, Alshon Jeffrey, Michael Crabtree, Kenny Britt. What are we missing here? We're missing Super Bowl winners. You don't have any Super Bowl winners on this list. It's as simple as that. Julian Edelman is not on this list. Why? Because New England realizes you're operating in a salary cap league. A salary cap league. So you've got to be very smart about where you're going to allocate the major money. This is something the Oakland Raiders are going to have to deal with in a couple of years. What are you going to do with Amari Cooper? If Amari Cooper keeps giving you 85 receptions, 1,000 to 1,200 yards, 8 or 9 touchdowns, how much is that worth? That's a valuable stat line. It's a valuable stat line if it's $5, $6 million a year. What if it's $17 million a year? What do you do if you're the Raiders? Because if you have to choose between him and Khalil Mack, who are you taking?
Khalil Mack.
If you have to choose between him and Derek Carr, who you taking?
Derek Carr.
Between him and Kelechi Osemele.
KO.
That's the point. Wide receivers, man, they're flashy. They have cool hair, drive cool cars, have great dances. They've got the comments for everyone. They got the outfits that look good. Everything about the wide receiver is appealing because it's flash, it's style, it's what we want. That's what we look for. No one celebrates an offensive guard. People love wide receivers. But when it's all said and done, when you get to the brass tacks of all of it, what does it mean to have Antonio Brown versus Julian Edelman? What does it mean to have A.J. Green versus Doug Baldwin, right? You just need to figure out how to get the most bang for your buck when it comes to salary cap. Baseball, you can spend like crazy. You can spend $90 million on Pablo Sandoval, and when you don't like how it works out, you can just pay him and let him go. You can pay him and let him go. So the OBJ thing, this is going to get worse and worse for the Giants because they've got Eli Manning. They've got a lot of top-level defenders, especially in that secondary. And at some point, you got to make tough decisions. And if this guy isn't willing to budge off, say, $15 million a year low, what would you do?
They're going to go in a new direction. You almost have to. And he's not going to – he's talking about being the highest-paid guy in the league, Joe. It's not going to happen. And I'm not saying that these guys deserve to be the highest-paid guys in the league. That's not what I was saying. As you're saying, there are certain receivers
that
really can help your team. You can put Edelman in a pitch bird, and he's not going to necessarily win the Super Bowl because the offense doesn't fit him as well. It's a different vertical type of offense. They don't have the same coaching staff, so he wouldn't be the same in that type of offense. You saw Randy Moss in a Tom Brady's offense, even if they had an Edelman, when they had a guy like Edelman and Wes Walker with the guy we're talking about, Randy what, 18 to 20-some touchdowns. He was able to be unbelievable, and it helped everyone else out because of the fact what Brady was able to do with the dominant type of receiver. So I'm just saying it does help your superstar quarterbacks out to have guys at a quarterback at the receiver position that can do other things that a lot of receivers can't do. Just don't overpay. I agree with you.
Ben Roethlisberger told the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette that he does not plan to make any plans beyond this season. In fact, retirement still an option. No serious commitment to the Steelers. What would you make of that if you're a Pittsburgh fan?
I think that Ben won't play more than 2 more years. And if you said, Lo, how long? This year, maybe next year would be the absolute max. I don't see it. Ben takes a beating, Joe, and he's beat up. His body's hurting. You see the guy, how he's moving around. Ben's feeling it. I don't see Ben going much longer, 1 or 2 years max. So I think Pittsburgh needs to think about a concession plan. I think they really need to start thinking about that.
How good does it look for the Oakland Raiders then?
Raiders are.
This is supposed to be one of the serious contenders that they face in just getting to the AFC Championship game. Not talking about winning the AFC. You just want to be in a position where you're 60 minutes from the Super Bowl. That's it. That's what the goal should be this year. Find yourself 60 minutes from the Super Bowl.
Right. Ben's tired. Brady's not. Even though Brady's older, he's not tired. He still pushes himself. And not to say that Ben doesn't push himself. It's just look at these two guys and listen at their language. Tom doesn't talk like that. Brady talk, you know, you look at Ben, he talks a different way. I think mentally, that's why everyone's talking about how Pittsburgh, to me, I don't see Pittsburgh doing that well this year. I know if they might win, but I don't see them being a Super Bowl contender.
The news surfaced last night in an interview that John Gruden is giving some serious consideration to finally returning to the National Football League. If he didn't want to come back, why would he even bother saying it? So, what would be the likely landing destination if Chucky decides the NFL is for him? That's coming up next. Joe, Lo, and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Joe, Lo, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
I believe today's musical theme is, what are we going with, boys? Summer music? This was in the summer? My God. This was back when I watched Total Request Live on MTV, where this would just sit up there in the top 10 for just what appeared to be 5 years. It felt like 5 years, Dibs.
Couldn't stop Waterfall. Don't go chasing waterfalls, Lo. You know that.
Lo, you ever chase a waterfall?
All the time. I still remember her name.
Joe, Lo, and Dibs, great to have you in on this Friday. We got into some ethical stuff yesterday, and the feedback from you, the listener, was tremendous regarding CTE as parents, as coaches, administrators, counselors, advisors. What do we do? What do we do with the youth? How do we advise them if they want to play football? Do we allow them to play football? Do we try to steer them in a different direction? It really took off on us. Today, Dibs presented something in the morning meeting that led into another great question, and we were going to throw this out to you as well. 888-957-9570. What level of criticism, if any, is acceptable in the public spotlight when it comes to a minor or amateur? What I mean by that, college football players, high school athletes, there's so much focus on these superstars or soon-to-be superstars that sometimes we forget they're still kids. This stems from a game that took place in Las Vegas 2 nights ago, an AAU showdown between LaMelo Ball, the younger brother of Lonzo Ball, the son of LeVar Ball, and Zion Williamson, widely regarded as the best high school prospect in the country. When all was said and done, Zion Williamson's SC Supreme team beat the Big Ballers squad 104-92. But this game was chaos. Chaos. They almost couldn't play it. So many people showed up. People stacked 6 rows deep. Damian Lillard, Thon Maker, Jamal Murray, Andrew Wiggins, Lonzo Ball, all of them were in attendance. LeBron James is working out with Derrick Rose in Vegas. He wanted to come by, and he was outside in the car and realized what the situation looked like. He had to leave. He couldn't put himself in that scenario. This was a monster game for two key players. And Dibs, as you watch some of the highlights, we can't help but be inundated with how the game played out and, to some extent, a level of criticism.
A lot of criticism for LaMelo Ball, of course, and it's not only criticism for how he plays, which is he likes to shoot the ball, Joe. He likes to shoot from distances that really only Steph Curry shoots from, but he's part of the Big Baller brand, and because his dad is such a blowhard, no. He's out there, you know, talking all the time and promoting the brand that the kid, to an extent, gets caught up in it. His dad's his AAU coach, and to have hundreds of people at this AAU game for a kid who's not even 16 years old yet, it's a lot of scrutiny for a young man.
He had a game not too long ago where someone made a compilation video. This is LaMelo Ball we're talking about, the younger brother of Lonzo Ball. He's going to be headed to UCLA when he graduates. It was a compilation video of all his misses from a game. This thing goes on for 45 seconds to a minute because he takes so many shots every game, where it was just miss after miss, bad shot after bad shot. And this thing went viral. Oh, take a look at LaMelo Ball. How many bad looks? Selfish basketball player. And on and on and on went the criticism. And then you sit there as you're watching it, and this is what I caught myself doing. I'm watching it, thinking, wow, he really jacked that thing up from a mile away. He's a kid. I don't need to publicly say anything about this on Twitter. Lo, where do you land on that? Because you've been in the public spotlight for quite some time, both as a wrestler and as a football player. You know what it was like in college down at Fresno. You also know what it was like having a son who was a highly recruited football prospect out of Texas and ended up at Purdue. What level of criticism, if any, is acceptable here?
Well, I really believe, Joe, and I hope that you got to have balance and you got to have parents. You got to have a supporting cast around you that's going to make sure your skin is thickened. Because we live in a world that's rapidly changing and so many different people have their own take and their own perspective about different things. And you're going to hear the noise. People are going to be talking. I remember watching, who didn't watch it, but my grandpa was telling me that, you know, when Yogi Berra played for the Yankees and, you know, the Hank Aaron was with the Atlanta Braves, and Hank Aaron was up to bat, and Yogi was the catcher. Yoga was the catcher, and he's catching. He's telling him, Hank, you got to turn your bat for the writing is to you, because if you don't have it turned away from you, you usually hit the ball and you make it break your bat. So he's in Hank Aaron's ear, and Hank just doesn't pay him any mind, and he swings, hits a home run, rounds first, second, comes home, pass home plate, and said, turn around, hey, Yoga. He said, I didn't come here to read. So sometimes
nice.
Sometimes you're going to have a lot of noise. And these young men and these young kids, you got to realize, Ball family, he's a lot of noise. Like, he's a blowhard. So there's all kind of people are going to be saying all kinds of things. You just got to understand, he's not here to read, to listen to what everyone is saying. He's there to play basketball because that's what the big ball brand wants to be.
You know, on one hand, you could make the case that this will toughen you up, thicken the skin a little bit. But on the other hand, as a society, we continue to just push the line of acceptability, the line of decorum, back further and further and further. I mean, you saw the story yesterday out of the White House, right? We have a new White House communications director. You saw the comments he gave on the record to the New Yorker. That's insane. Comments like that have never come out of the White House before, but that's become acceptable today. Now, no matter what side you land on for that, is irrelevant. The point is, we keep pushing it back further and further. LaMelo Ball is someone that should be encouraged. He's someone that should be advised. He's someone that should be coached up. Because at the end of the day, Dibs, how old is he?
He'll be 16 in a month,
Joe.
He's
15 years old.
He's younger than my son. And I know as you get older, it's going to be to the point where the pro athletes are going to all be younger than my kids, as it is now that every pro athlete in the major sports is all younger than you now. That's when you know you're getting old, Lo. When you look around any and all leagues, it's like, dang, there's no one even close in age. But I digest, as we like to say. The kid's not even 16 years of age. You look at his Instagram, he's got 2.1 million followers.
Oh, really?
2.1 million followers for this kid.
They're already a brand, though, Joe. That's the thing you got to realize.
It doesn't mean that he has to put himself out there for some of the hate speech that goes on his Instagram and some of the comments. That's not something that he should have to face.
He shouldn't, but this is the world we live in. LeBron James he turned around and left. Think about for a little high school AAU game. You can't even get a seat. It's not because of how good of a player these guys are. It's to watch the spectacle. You wouldn't even know, be talking about it, if his dad didn't put this stage and set this up for this. They have been destined, or they have been because of what their father's doing. This guy needs to write a book. Look what the brand, if you can play a little bit, and they're decent players, we're not saying they're not. But look at, a lot of kids didn't even come out, get this type of hype because of what this dad is doing and putting them on that stage. So people are going to criticize him. They shouldn't. He's 14, 15 years old. I get it. But it happens. It happens. Just because it's done publicly, you played ball, Joe, where the coach said, hey, foreign ball, man, throw the ball to the hit and talk about you. You're not going to jump on you and say, you got to hit that out route. Got all on your butt. Said it publicly. Maybe said it. But it's a different era. Now people go to social networks. So it happened. Coaches got on me. So people talked about us. You know, you played, you got dips, you played sports. People got on you. Even, it's just the way it is.
You're right. You're completely right. But that's in so much more of a controlled, private setting.
It
might be a coach getting on you in front of your teammates, right? And even then, the coach has to be smart enough to know which players can handle that and which players can't. I think about just my own development. I was so self-conscious of everything growing up, through high school, even through college. I didn't really come into my own at all, into my skin, into any sort of level of confidence until I went to law school. I mean, I was 23 at the time, and even then, totally immature. Wouldn't have been able to handle anything like this. There's no denying that wherever you land on LeVar Ball, what he did has benefited his family. There is no way
Without
you can deny that. Lonzo Ball getting drafted number 2 overall, maybe he ends up with the Lakers if you never hear of LeVar. Maybe. But he forced the action. The father forced the action to the point where L.A. at some point had to think to themselves, if we pass on this kid, what happens? They didn't have that conversation about anyone else. They had it about him. If we pass on this kid, what happens? Because everyone knew who he was. How many people were familiar with Josh Jackson, right? How many people were truly familiar with Markelle Fultz coming out? Maybe you knew a little bit about the guy and watched a few minutes of him hoop. You knew a lot more about Lonzo Ball. And there's a reason the Lakers have sold so many season tickets coming into this upcoming season. I mean, that is the hottest ticket in LA right now. They got a football team there that's entering just its second year of existence in that city. They got another football team that's just moving in for its first year. And the loser Lakers are the hottest ticket in town because of Lonzo Ball and the hype that surrounds that. But again, you have to ask yourself, is that the right thing for the child? Does the child, especially LaMelo, deserve the criticism he gets just because he jacks up a few ill-advised shots?
And it's ruthless. If you look at some of the social media stuff, and it's also the scrutiny, Joe, you can look at what he did. He was 13 for 31 in their second game, their victory over Play Hard, Play Smart. Which
where his names come from?
The team obviously didn't play hard, play defense when you give up 111 points in a 32-minute game, but that's neither here nor there. The fact that you can see his stats, you can look at video, somebody puts together a compilation of all of his misses, and he had a 92-point game in high school, and he was criticized for maybe shooting too much and not passing. And I understand that the fact that his dad is putting all of them out there makes them open to some criticism, but you have to remember the kid's only 15 years old. How is this going to affect his psyche?
You know what? I don't think it will, because they tweet, Instagram, the stuff that our kids, that they're exposed to now. I don't know how the next 30, 40 years, I don't know where we can go.
How many child stars end up to some extent screwed up because of all the fame and attention they get at such a young age?
A lot of them. Joe, but you guys just think, looking at this kid, my daughter and stuff, they follow people that have 2-3 million followers, and they're not even athletes. They're not but they're a star in dancing. It's crazy how the world we live in, they're just regular people. People are self-made in this world, and they want the attention. They thrive for it, and parents put them right there to make them thrive for it. I mean, look no further than Mike Tyson. Guy was 17 years old, knocking fools out. Look at the media attention. Did he make him crazy? Probably. He was still a little crazy anyway, but
I'm not sure it was the media that flipped him. I'm pretty sure he was who he was from start to finish. Do you remember that comment he made about how he used to punch old ladies in the face to steal their groceries?
Yeah.
That's what he used to do when he was growing up in Harlem.
But that's my point. He was 15, 16 years old, knocking out men.
Yeah.
17, knocking out men, Joe. Beating guns up. I mean, that's crazy.
Now, back to Joe, Low, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
He's a 3-time Super Bowl champion, 2-time Pro Bowler. You can catch him as the co-host of Stink and Evans on 104.3 The Fan in Denver. He's also a highly regarded actor, based on what I've been watching on TV. Mark Schlereth with Joe, Low, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Hey, Stink, another great performance on Ballers recently. Congratulations.
Well, thank you, man. I appreciate that. It's been a lot of fun. Ballers have been great, and Yeah, there's a sign that hangs at, and I'm at Broncos training camp right now. I'm watching practice, but there's a sign that hangs in the Broncos training room. I used to read it every day, and it reminded me a lot of DJ, The Rock. And that sign says you can easily judge the character of a man by how he treats those who can do nothing for him. He is one of the most gracious people I've ever been around, knows everybody's name, knows all the cameramen and everybody. And I tell you what, man, just takes care of those people. And that's how the set is on Ballers. So it's just a joy to work there, man. Everybody is in it together, and they're having a blast. So, you know, for me, it was really a kind of a breath of fresh air to be put in that situation the last 3 years and just be readily accepted, even though I don't have any clue what I'm doing when it comes to acting.
Well, since you opened the door, I'm going to jump right through it. Any indication that The Rock's going to run for president in 2020?
You know what? He says it all the time. I don't know if he's joking about it on his social media outlets or not, but I tell you what, like I said, one of the most humble and one of the kindest people I've ever been around. So that certainly would be a breath of fresh air in the White House, wouldn't it? I mean, I'd vote for the guy.
And certainly, and I don't think that any, quote, joke about running for presidency can be considered a joke anymore after what we went through last election cycle. You know, the whole idea of a joke run, which turned out to be the president. But I digest, as our very own Lorenzo Neal likes to say. Mark, we're looking at the Dallas situation a lot with Ezekiel Elliott and still waiting for the league to make a decision, yay or nay, on suspension. What do you think happens to Dallas this year in the second year of Dak and Ezekiel and greater expectations?
Yeah, I mean, I think they come back to the pack a little bit because I think it's hard to sustain, you know, a 12-4 record. And I think Zeke is probably going to miss some time. You know, I thought the Lucky Whitehead thing was funny. The sacrificial lamb, we're going to cut him anyhow, even though it was a proven case of mistaken identity. Like, do you think Zeke is actually going to get the message that you cut Lucky Whitehead to show him that you guys mean business? You don't mean business with your star players. You never have. So, you know, for me, there comes the difference between, as my dad used to say to me all the time, no right way to do something wrong. And at some point, the only thing that really resonates with players is losing recess. You know, take them off the football field. Make them a healthy scratch. Don't let them play. And I don't know that the Dallas Cowboys kind of have that as part of their organizational mantra. So they're going to wait for the league to make a suspension. I assume they feel like it's coming because they signed Ronnie Hillman to a deal yesterday, I believe. So that part is a mess. I think they'll come back to the pack to a certain degree, but I think Dak Prescott's the real deal, man. They certainly have a great offensive line, a great receiving core. They've got, which many people don't account for in this day and age of football, Scott Linehan, who was my college quarterback at University of Idaho, is their offensive coordinator, really believes in call it and run it plays, and they have a system to block 8-man fronts, 9-man fronts, like back in the day when Zoe was playing, man. It's what they do, and they've got some of the best blocking tight ends in football. They've had that for a long time, so they always have a plan why they're so efficient in the red zone. Then you mix in the fact that Dak is one of those guys that can run some of that read zone stuff that's thick enough and athletic enough and a good enough runner to do some of that. It gives them another wrinkle in the red zone. They'll possess the ball. They'll be a good team. I think they'll probably win that division, but I think it'll be closer. It won't be the runaway it was last year.
Sure. Hey, Steak, when you're over in Denver, who's the front runner, in your opinion, is quarterback position here? And you looked at Denver last year, a team that liked to run the ball, didn't do as well as they liked offensively up front, and also on the defensive side of the ball, against the run. Have they addressed those issues? And if they're a formidable opponent, or this team, you think they're going to get in?
Yeah, I think it's going to be really tough based on the schedule and based on what they have on the offensive side of the ball. So many questions. To be a playoff contender, especially in the AFC West, which is arguably the toughest division in football right now with the Chiefs, with the Raiders. San Diego's going to be better than they were last year. There's no question because they were so decimated by injuries. So I think it's going to be really tough for the Broncos to be a playoff contending team. A lot of questions. You talked about the quarterback. 80% of their offensive line has turned over. They're going to probably have a rookie starting at the left tackle position. So a lot of question marks there. The running back position, there's some question marks. They don't have a legit receiving kind of threat tight end guy. So that's going to be a big question for them as well. Right now, you know, it's kind of neck and neck, 50-50 competition. Obviously, athletically, Trevor isn't as gifted as Paxton Lynch. But just a knowledge of the game and an understanding and the fact that
Trevor really has the respect of his locker room because of the way he played hurt last year. Going into camp, it's going to be, you know, whoever plays better. I mean, it's the ultimate meritocracy here, even though Paxton was a first-round pick. It really is, and I talked to the head coach, Vance Joseph, yesterday. It's really a 50-50. Whoever performs the best in the first couple of weeks is going to get the starting nod, and that's what they're going to go with. So I still fully expect both players to play at some point during the season, because I think there's going to be some growing pains on the offensive side of the ball. But as of right now, I will say that Paxton Lynch has shown great maturity from year one to year two. He is he's been a totally different guy just from a swagger standpoint than he was last year.
Three-time Super Bowl champ, FS1 analyst Mark Schlereth with Joe Lowen-Dibbs on 95.7 The Game. Finish this sentence for me if you don't mind. The Oakland Raiders will win the AFC if...
If Derek Carr performs. If he is great like he was last year, they win the AFC West. And again, you know, coming off the injury and all those things, you know, the scary thing for me with the Oakland Raiders is... they lost their quarterback, and I understand it's hard to win with backup quarterbacks, but they literally tucked their tail between their legs and just quit. They rolled over week 17 against the Broncos when the division was on the line, and they just flat didn't show up. And so it goes to show you how mature he is and kind of how he has the pulse of this locker room. But boy, I tell you what, it was bad. It was a bad performance. So if he is healthy and he is the guy he was before he got hurt, they'll win that division.
Mark Schlereth with Joe Lowen-Dibbs on 95.7 The Game. Before you came on, we were talking about Odell Beckham and his comments recently about wanting to be the highest paid player in football, not just receiver, but player. If you're the New York Giants right now, how do you think you're acting in the front office to comments like that? You're going to disappoint him ultimately because there's no way you've got $25 million to spend per year on a wide receiver.
Right. I think I would laugh it off initially, like he can't be serious. He plays a dependent position. Listen, man, you know, I don't know at what time, at what point receivers started overvaluing themselves to the point where they thought they were the difference maker. If you don't block people, you don't win in the National Football League. It's just the way it is. And you're dependent upon, you know, 10 other guys doing their job before you can get the football. So as far as Odell Beckham Jr. is concerned, I wish I could buy him for what he's worth and sell him for what he thinks he's worth, because I quit working and you never hear from me again.
nice.
He's a legit player. I do remember last year in the playoffs, him taking off his shirt and going down to Miami and then showing up to a game and not showing up in a playoff game, having some drops, having some issues. So, again, like, receivers are great. They're a nice part of the game, especially with the rules, the way they're bent toward throwing the football. I get it. But you are completely dependent on everybody else having success around you.
He sure looked good with the shirt off, though. You got to give it to him. And then, oh, what a boat he had, too.
Hey, that's weird, Dibbs.
That's a little bit jealousy coming out of me. I wish I looked like that with a shirt off.
Yeah, I wish I had that kind of free time as well. Mark Schlereth joining us here on 95.7 The Game. John Lynch comes to San Francisco with Kyle Shanahan in tow. What sort of expectations can Niner fans have as far as growth of this team? Not necessarily wins, but player development with these two.
I think you've already, I mean, if you've read the articles, Joe Staley has already talked about the difference, the level of, from a competition to just a player standpoint, how much better they are right now, and you know, just a talent wise and a level of competition. One thing I know about John is gonna, you know, he is gonna grind, man. He is a grinder, and he understands the value of competition, and he also understands the value of, I mean, the guy's gonna be a Hall of Famer, and the guy coming out was considered, hey, good player. He was a backup player initially for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and became a superstar in this league. And that's through work and effort and competition and all those things. And so he'll bring that mentality. I will tell you the other thing. I've been around Kyle Shanahan since he was a kid. Obviously, my time with Denver, Kyle was always around. And Kyle, you have to give him a boatload of credit. And I've talked to Mike about this as well. When Mike and Kyle were in Washington together, Kyle implemented that offense. Kyle put that offense together that won RG3 the Rookie of the Year. And we saw when RG3 no longer wanted to play in that style of offense, we saw his inability to be a quarterback at the NFL level from a traditional standpoint. So you've got to give Kyle a ton of credit, with what he did in Atlanta last year, albeit the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl, which was somewhat of a debacle. But he's a great coach. He's a great young coach. He's been around it forever because he was here every day in training camp and everything else back in the day. So to me, you know, you've got a situation now where there's some credibility and some believability rather than what you had the last couple of years with the, you know, who I like to call everybody's favorite butcher, Jim Tom Sula. And then he looked like the butcher from the Brady Bunch or something. Like you just walk into a grocery store and he'd be serving you the meat. Like, what do you want? I'll have a tenderloin. Thanks, you know. And then, you know, obviously with Chip Kelly, who runs that janky high school offense that is unsustainable in this day and age of the NFL. And, you know, pieces of that as an adjunct to what you do, great. But making that your offense, unsustainable. And it's unsustainable for your defensive players as well with a 46-man game day roster. It's ludicrous to think that that would ever work. And, you know, a lot of people bought into that baloney. I'm not being one of them, never did. He wasn't going to revolutionize football by serving guys protein drinks at halftime. You know that, I mean, stop it. Stop with that garbage. So they've got a legit NFL coaching staff and front office right now.
He's a three-time Super Bowl champ, two-time Pro Bowler. You can catch him on FS1 as the co-host of Stinkin' Evans on 104.3 The Fan in Denver. And on the Stinkin' Truth podcast, it's Mark Schlereth with Joe Lo and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Thank you for your time, Stink. Enjoy camp, and hopefully we can do it again soon.
Anytime, guys. Take care.
Now back to Joe Lo and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Happy Friday. If you're just joining us, if you're just waking up, if you missed the nugget last night, John Gruden, broadcaster extraordinaire from ESPN, in an interview with the website PewterReport.com, which covers the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Gruden has that itch to get back to coaching. The timing is interesting. And as we look around the National Football League, which is where we'll begin, were Gruden to make a comeback next year, to put the flag in the ground and say, I'm open for business, where's the likely landing spot, Loniel?
He's got a lot of landing spots. When you look at the state of the NFL, especially with coaches that's probably ran their course, Joe, he's got his pick of the litter. And let's start with the place that you know what he is. He's a quarterback guru, and they say that he's one of the best quarterback coaches out there. I'll tell you a place that he would love to be, and I guarantee this place would throw a lot of money at him. And you guys know this young man. He loves this young man. You're talking about no further than the Indianapolis Colts with Andrew Luck. You look at Andrew Luck, a Stanford kid, smart guy. Gruden would love to be involved with that young man. I could see him being right there in Indy, Joe.
Indy's one, and there are some, we see this every year. 4, 5, 6 teams are going to turn over head coaches. Indianapolis is very compelling because if you remember, Gruden's initial transition in the NFL went from Oakland to where?
Tampa Bay.
Taylor made elite defense already in place. He's an offensive mind. He doesn't have to worry about that side of the ball. He comes in. Monty Kiffin, Lane's father, is going to hold that down. He's going to develop the offensive side. Wham, bam, there's a Super Bowl. Dibs, Indianapolis is a very intriguing landing destination. As you search through all the teams that have coaches on the hot seat, what stands out to you as a spot for John Gruden?
Well, I was kind of trying to anticipate what Lowe was going to say, and I thought you were going to go with Pittsburgh because I know that you're kind of down on Mike Tomlin, and I think when you look at the lineage of Pittsburgh head coaches, what, they've had 3 head coaches in 50 years or something?
It's insane.
If they were going to move on from Mike Tomlin, it would have to be to a figure like John Gruden, and he has a quarterback toward the end of his career. He could draft a quarterback that he could then mentor. That would be a spot where I think he would be an absolutely perfect fit stylistically as a person and as a coach. So I think Indy is definitely a better, more likely choice. But just when you were talking, Lo, I was thinking, man, Pittsburgh might be the spot because You've always been somebody thinking that Mike Tomlin might be in trouble if they have a down year.
And he can just work well with, think about the young Luck. Now these two can grow together. Luck has another 10 years left in the league. You look at a guy like Big Ben, he doesn't have much left in the tank. You got to look at this Gruden. He wants a guy that's already polished, a guy he can just put a little bit more on and help him out a little bit more. And that would be a great guy for him to go ahead and continue to develop with him. So I think that Luck would be a perfect ideal for him.
I think those are great suggestions. I think the New York Jets are fascinating because he'd go against Belichick and Todd Bowles is on the hot seat. Plus, if the Jets tank out this year like we all know they're going to, you're going to have the pick of the litter from a very good quarterback class. But I think it's already been determined. I think if he's coming back, the timing of this interview, of this announcement, tells you everything you need to know about where he's going to go. Indianapolis is a great idea. Pittsburgh, fascinating in the AFC North. But there's a team that's already on the rocks. There's a team that's already in trouble. It's a monster destination. It's a ton of money. It's the biggest spotlight imaginable. It's the Dallas Cowboys. Gruden sees the turmoil now. Wow. Zeke Elliott's likely headed for a suspension. You've got a turnover of 5 starters on the defensive end of the ball. You've got a very young, intriguing quarterback prospect in Dak Prescott. All the money in the world, all the glamour, the number one valued sports property in the world. Not Manchester United, nothing in the soccer realm, nothing in the hoops realm. It's the Dallas Cowboys. Garrett has had his time. Garrett has not gotten the job done. And the way they flamed out at home against the Packers last year, you know Jerry Jones, in his 70s, has had enough of this. He wants at least one more Super Bowl. That is the splashiest name you could bring in. I think Gruden right now, this is all calculated timing. He sees the Zeke news. He sees every little thing that's happening in Dallas, and he might as well just send up a flare. I'm thinking about coming back. You don't think Jerry Jones has already heard about this report? You don't think Jerry Jones has already had at least one conversation with somebody in his family about the idea of John Gruden should things go south for Big D this year?
Yeah, I think that'd be phenomenal. I think there's some other teams that would catch his eye. I think that he would like that, but I just don't know how him and Jarrah would get along when you look at two guys that love that camera that they're going to put in front of these two young individuals. And you know Jerry wants a guy that's a yes guy, a guy. You look at Jason Carrot Top, he's not a guy that's out in the forefront. You never really see him. You know who's going to do most of the talking. And Big D, it's Jarrah. You think about Jarrah with Zeke Elliott. Think about how he always is the one of the guys that's going to come to the forefront. I don't know if Chucky's going to let that happen, Joe. Is he going to be the head coach? I just don't see Chucky letting that happen at all times.
The Take Your Pick poll question brought to you by FH Daily and Novato Chevrolet is up on our website, 957thegame.com. Feel free to weigh in. Will John Gruden be coaching again in 2018? Dibs, we've kicked around several options, but I think we might be missing one realm entirely of where Gruden could be looking.
And I guess that is going back to college, because when you look at the college landscape, obviously there's what, 4 or 5 times more jobs if you just look at the D1 level and the FBS level. And you can't help but think with his enthusiasm and his ability to encourage, and think about the recruiting that he could do. If you're a quarterback, knowing that he's mentored so many of these pro quarterbacks would be a natural fit, but you start to look a little bit deeper, and this report you talked about from pewterreport.com, which is the Tampa Bay Bucks fan website, he says college may not be exactly the best destination. He said he went and visited Nick Saban. He visited Chip Kelly at Oregon, and he was determined to be a college coach. And then he said, quote, "I realized if I became a college coach, I would probably have you on probation within 4 or 5 weeks. All the recruiting, the Facebook, the texting, the emails, all that stuff." He says he'd probably have you in real deep, deep trouble if he was working the college game, because you only get, what, 15 hours a week to practice, and he's used to 15 hours a day.
Lo, imagine being the number one recruit in the country, some of the coaches that would be walking through your front door if Chucky's back in the college ranks.
It'd be absolutely phenomenal for any young man to have Chucky walk through the front door, and then next hour it's Saban, next hour it's Harbaugh. Think about those three men, and you know, look at Ohio State, Urban Meyer. There are some phenomenal coaches out there.
Saban, Urban Meyer, Jim Harbaugh, and Chucky. coming yeah. through your front door to try and recruit you.
You flip a coin. You're almost to a point where you flip a coin, and you got to look at it. All those who would be the leading if you're a quarterback, a young man, is to think you want to play in the next level, aspire to, especially as the quarterback position. It'd be Chucky. You look at Harbaugh, he doesn't run necessarily sometimes a conventional offense, but you know Chucky does. You know that he's a guy that really he has his quarterback coaching what he does out there for the National Football League. Guys, young men, when he walk into their living room, Joe, with their parents there, without a doubt, he'll be a hard sell.
If he comes back and it's to the NFL, my number one pick's the Dallas Cowboys. You guys threw out some great choices as well. Dibbs saying Pittsburgh, fascinating. You saying Indianapolis, new regime there with the front office. Chris Ballard, Ed Dodds have taken over as the top two guys there. You'd have Andrew Luck. We all know how much Chucky loves Andrew Luck. I want to throw a dark horse out there as well. Green Bay. Mike McCarthy's been there a while. And there's chatter that starts every year later in the season that you have a Hall of Fame quarterback. When it's all said and done, one of the best to ever play the game. And you went to one Super Bowl. Now you won it. But you went to one Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers. You're going to have Aaron Rodgers for, what, 12, 15 years? Mm. And you're going to get one Super Bowl out of it? At some point, someone's going to look at Mike McCarthy and think to themselves, we might need to consider an upgrade. And if Chucky's sitting out there, that might be the upgrade.
Especially when he said in this interview that maybe his biggest regret, one of his biggest life regrets, was passing on him when he was at Tampa in the 05 draft with the number 5 pick. So for him to have a chance to go back and now coach Aaron Rodgers and at the peak of his performance, that would make everything right in his own mind.
Hit us up on social media at 957 The Game on Twitter. We'd love to hear your guesses for where John Gruden would be coaching next should he choose to move out of the broadcasting booth next season.
Now back to Joe, Lowe, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Happy Friday. Let's give away some tickets. Your chance to win a family four-pack to the Ellie Mae Classic at TPC Stonebray beginning Monday, July 31st and running through Sunday, August 6th. All winners qualify for a grand prize VIP experience, which includes four VIP passes, fully catered hospitality, and round-trip limo service to the event. The event, mind you, happens to feature two-time MVP Steph Curry. Tickets and info available at elliemayclassic.com. Trivia question for the phone line, 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. The Washington Nationals hit back-to-back-to-back-to-back home runs in the third inning of Thursday's 15-2 win over the Milwaukee Brewers. Prior to that explosion, when was the last time a major league team hit back-to-back-to-back-to-back home runs in a game? We just need the year. 888-957-9570. Prior to yesterday, when was the last time a team hit back-to-back-to-back-to-back home runs in a game? Speaking of baseball, Jerry Krasnick, writer for ESPN.com and Baseball America, tweeted this out 17 minutes ago. The San Francisco Giants are in a deadline box. They're shopping Denard Span, but no market for him. He has 5 stolen bases and a minus 18 defensive runs saved metric in center field.
That's not very good, is it?
That's horrible. That's absolutely horrible. Span hasn't been a bust of a signing by any stretch of the imagination, but if anything, what have the last few weeks told you about this team? So many people want to cling to the fact that the Giants are just a few moves away from getting right back into contention. You do realize that every time they float a name to sell, nobody wants it. Here's your latest. Denard Span, they're trying to move. Quote from Jerry Krasnick, no market. They want to move Jeff Samardzija, and everyone will tell you about these metrics that point to how solid he is, yet no takers. What am I missing? Nunez brought back a couple prospects. Put it all together, people. Read between the lines. Understand that this team right now, not in a good spot. They've got some talent, but they are not close to contending. We're talking about a 31-game difference between a Dodger team that's won more games in their last 45 outings than the Phillies have won all year. More games in their last 45 outings than the Phillies have won all year. You're 31 games out in the division. You can't overtake them with one or two moves. I'm sorry, those moves aren't out there. So, outside of the wild card, what is it you're going to do to contend? Nobody wants Span. Nobody wants Hunter Pence. Nunez brought back two prospects. What else you got?
They're going to continue to move the pieces that they don't believe that has been their core. They're going to give these older guys, Joe, and guys that brought them championships, three championships, they're going to give them another opportunity. They believe that they have something left in the tank, and they're going to ride with them. And maybe next year they feel that things are going to change. You get a fresh start. Madison won't get hurt. Maybe Johnny Cueto comes around next year again, show that he can win you 18 to 15 games again, get you back there. And then they're looking at, okay, so we're going to address, you know, left field. We're going to address center field and maybe even right field. So, you know, even with Hunter Pence. So this team is looking at saying, okay, we're going to keep our four. We're going to keep core guys. And we're just everyone else. We're going to plug in and maybe try to go get some more bats out there in those positions that they're trying to fill. But don't know. Don't know if that's going to work, Dibs.
It's frustrating, too, I'm sure, for Giants fans and for other teams who are trying to do business with the Giants. You go to that garage sale, Joe, and you see the person's house open, and you see some items in the driveway, and you're looking through the items in the driveway, and you're not thrilled with them. And then you look behind them into the garage, and you see a shiny new bike, and you say, hey, is that maybe up for sale? No, you can't have that. You see a brand new set of golf clubs. Oh, is that up for sale? No, you can't have that. We got this broken down set here in the driveway, and we got a bicycle with two flat tires, but you can't have the nice motorcycle in the garage. So teams that are trying to deal with San Francisco, to Lowe's point, they're trying to reload, so they're trying to hold on to their best assets. They're just trying to get rid of the things that they don't really value anymore.
The Johnny Cueto contract just under 2 years ago looked genius from a team perspective. It was genius because it was 6 years and $130 million, and Cueto's coming off a World Series win. But more importantly, that two-year opt-out. Everyone thought he was going to opt out and go back in for one last major payday. That really was getting you Johnny Cueto for like 2 years, $40 million. That was totally reasonable considering the Red Sox are giving David Price more than $30 million a year and Zach Greinke's making more than $30 million a year. That was a hell of a deal. Now, in just under 2 years' time, the perception of that contract has completely flipped. Rather than an easy out after 2 years at a really, really reasonable cost for his skill set, he doesn't opt out. If he stays in, now you're hooked on this guy for another 4 years. And there's no guarantee it's going to get any better. He's not handling the new baseballs very well. He's getting blisters left and right. He doesn't want to be in the clubhouse. He's talked about finishing his career in the American League. Like, this contract went from genius to albatross in just 1 year's time. It's staggering. And yet there's still this perception that we just need to make a couple moves and we're right back in it. What are the moves?
He's not going to opt out. Johnny, with this year, the way he's playing, and I think they know that, he's going to say, shoot, because he thought he was going to get to the open market or opt out of his contract and make more than what he was making, like you alluded to. But when you're not having success, he's going to be like, for what? For who? Boy, you know the bird in hand is better. The old saying, a bird in hand is better than two in a bush. So Johnny's going to stay. And Johnny's going to show you. Johnny won't have another year like this. He's not going to play, you know, next year like this. He'll probably, you know, figure out the blister thing and use the ball more, start pitching even earlier, have those balls used to him. So I think that this is not truly Johnny. I don't think Johnny will sneak it up like he is this year.
Here's another point from Jerry Krasnick. He tweeted this out 1 minute after the Denard Span tweet. The San Francisco Giants would move Hunter Strickland, but a relief glut has suppressed his value. They might keep him to go with Smith, Dyson, and Melanson in 2018. So there's another guy you want to move, but because everyone else has already made their moves on relievers, Colorado, Nishak, that took place the other day, there's nothing left to do.
I don't know how much you'd get back from Hunter Strickland anyway. He's got a plus fastball 97-98, but not a lot of movement on it, and he has not shown a great ability to establish that second pitch. Plus, you add in the Bryce Harper set two, the imbroglio that happened earlier this season. Maybe that has teams turned off as well. And if you think about that bullpen for next year, Will Smith coming back from injury, Sam Dyson's looked good this year. Mark Melanson's been a big question mark because of his injuries. You got to wonder what other moves they can make to shore up this bullpen if they're really interested in trying to compete next year.
Lo, if someone offered you a max contract that topped out at $200 million, how long would it take you to sign that contract, knowing that there are no other options at the immediate moment for you to go sign with? There's this deal for $200 million, and that's the most you can make, or you can just, you know, kind of hang tight on what you've got, but you're not going to get more from anyone else.
Where's the contract? You sign it right now. It don't take me long at all. You do what you do, what's best for you, and that's what they're going to do. No question.
Well, it's taken Russell Westbrook 27 days, and he still hasn't signed the max offer that Oklahoma City made him as soon as they could do it on July 1st. Mm. $200 million for a max player. It's the most he could be offered anywhere. We are now 26 days removed, and he hasn't signed it. Now, he's got until October to sign it, but if you love Oklahoma City as much as you were saying last year, if you're that hell-bent on staying there, what's the holdup? What's the holdup to the deal? Or suddenly now that Paul George is in the mix and you have the opportunity to opt out after this year, when LeBron's going to be on the market, when Chris Paul could be back on the market, when Kevin Durant could be on the market, a lot of different players could be floating around in today's NBA out there. Maybe, just maybe, Oklahoma City's only got one more year left of you. Is that a reasonable assertion?
Yeah, I really think that he should have signed it, because you're absolutely right. There's going to be some guys out there that's going to be a free agent, and you look at Paul George being there. If they feel, hey, look, Paul George shows that he can take over this team, and he's more of a guy that likes to, you know, share the ball, and they feel that this is the guy, maybe they remove that offer and say, shoot, let's go with Paul George.
Oh, Paul's leaving. Paul's not going to stay there. He's there 1 year.
You think he's gone?
But let's just put it like this. What has given you any indication that Paul George wants to remain in Oklahoma City? He wanted out of Indiana, Midwestern city, small city, small market, and made it clear he wanted to go to L.A. So why would he want to hang out in Oklahoma City?
Well, I think that it could be a situation if LeBron beats him to L.A., if there's, you know, with all these contracts and all these guys being up, these teams are, you know, players are going to have their options. But if there's a guy named LeBron, if he opts out and there's other guys that are there, you might not get the chair that you want. That's all.
But if you're Russell Westbrook and you sign this max deal and you agree to stay in Oklahoma City, do you really think you can attract anyone to come there? Paul George only came there as a destination on his way to another destination, kind of a truck stop. Oklahoma City is not going to be a big draw for any other player. So if Russ signs that massive $200 million deal, he's stuck there, and he's not going to be able to build a super team there.
People said that about here. I mean, the Golden State, I'm Fresno, and I've seen this place what it used to be. I mean, it's not like players were dying to get here. It was like the Raiders, a graveyard. People go to last place, the last stop, and now all of a sudden you turn it around. So you can look at small markets, look at the Boston, you look at Cleveland at certain times when LeBron was there. It depends on the athlete that's there. So I don't necessarily agree with you guys saying that, yes, the city means a lot. I get that. But also, depends on who you got on your squad.
How about this quote? It's like the elephant in the room, and you don't want to talk about it. But I've gotten to the point in my life where I'm like, nah, there's no need to talk about it. I believe that I will be, hopefully, not just the highest paid receiver in the league, but the highest paid, period. That, courtesy of wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr., who seriously wants to be considered for a contract that would make him the highest paid player in the National Football League. How's that resonate with you?
You know what? He actually believes that.
That's what should scare you.
And the thing about it is, there'll be a team. I don't know if they're going to make him the highest paid, but there's going to be a team that's going to get desperate, and they're going to overpay him. You see it happen all the time, Joe. You see it happen all the time.
It's just, like, this is what's got to worry you if you're the Giants, that this guy would say this, that he would think to himself that he might be in the running for something like that. How important is the wide receiver position? As you rank positions on the football field, where do you rank the wide receiver position? Is it better than quarterback? Or, sorry, phrase that differently. Is it more important than quarterback?
No.
Is it more important than left tackle?
No.
Is it more important than pass rusher?
No.
Is it more important than cornerback?
No, right there. It's right there with
yes corner. Or no, exactly.
Yeah, but the biggest thing about it, what you're missing though, is the perception. These divas believe they are, and the reality is, people are paying the value. Megatron got $100-some million contract. So when you look at it for that team, but here's what people have to realize: when you have a quarterback like that, They're saying they got to get him the ball. And he's the guy that people believe that is a definitely game changer in his elite. So those elite of the elite court receivers, they get it.
Receiver isn't even a top five position. It's probably not even top six. I'd say it's probably not even top seven. Do you know why? Who just won the Super Bowl? Who's his receivers? Julian Edelman, Danny Amendola.
Yeah.
Brady can make it work with anyone. It's the quarterback. It's the protection. It's the pass rushing and it's coverage. You don't need an elite wide receiver. The elite wide receivers, A.J. Green, never wins in the playoffs. Calvin Johnson, never won in the playoffs. Julio was in the Super Bowl, made a huge play, but they couldn't capitalize on it. Made the second biggest play of the Super Bowl, but couldn't capitalize on it. Wide receivers, you can make it work with everything else. Wide receivers are plug and play, man. He thinks he's going to be the highest paid guy in New York. Better start preparing for life without him if that's the type of negotiation they're in for. Mark Schlereth up next on that, and John Gruden returning to the NFL? We're back in a minute. Joe Lowe and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.